Okay, so for these video classes, we've spent some time looking at the Khandakas and various kinds of various chapters and so on. Now we've only got a few weeks left in the Vinaya class, and I'm actually going to be away for some of the weeks in the next month. So we'll probably see if somebody else, maybe Asitama or Ayadamananda, if you'd like to do something for those weeks that I'm away. But in any case, for this week, I thought it would be useful, rather than starting a new chapter, which will probably end up being quite disrupted by coming and goings anyway, that it might be more useful to just open up the floor for questions, since we have had a number of discussions and so on Vinaya topics. So I'll just open up the floor for questions, and we'll see if we can solve any problems that anyone might have, and with a bit of luck, create some new ones. Okay, questions. Out come the lists. Excellent, that's what I want. You've got a hierarchical prioritized list, that's good.
Could you perhaps actually just go through the text of the particular Pachitya rule, just to see how you break it down, how you approach?
Of course, which particular Pachitya rule?
Okay, like the one in between is 161, the one that the monks also have about picking up valuables in a monastery or whatever is okay.
Okay.
Otherwise not. So, if you could just explain how that's...
So this is the Ratna rule and the Pachityas. So the text is actually found in the Bhikkhu Vibhanga, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
This is one of the ones held in common. Held in common.
I'm not sure what number it is for the Bhikkhu, though.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's 84 for the Bhikkhu.
Yeah, that's okay. It's in the Ratna Vibhanga. So it's the Ratna Sikha Pada. Okay. It's not too bad. Okay, so what are you asking specifically?
Well, I just kind of want to see how the method one does when one approaches reading a rule and going to the Vibhanga. So before
okay,
I ask
okay.
Questions about, what about in this case?
Okay.
I want to see how you do it wrong.
Okay, okay, good. Okay. So here's one particular Vinaya rule. It's called the Ratna Sikapada. So when we're looking, when we're reading the Vinaya rules, it's important to bear in mind a number of principles. The first principle to bear in mind is to remember that the Vinaya rule itself is just a text. So the Vinaya rule can't tell us what we should do or how we should live and so on. The texts by themselves just sit on a page. And it's up to a person to come along and read them. It's a little bit like that idea we were talking about with David Hume's philosophy the other day, that things only have meaning when they're actually... You know what I mean, all right? A while ago, shortly. In another lifetime. So they only take meaning when a human being picks them up and reads them. And of course, human beings being different, every time we read a text, we'll draw, every person brings to a text their own unique perspective, and we'll draw something different out of it. Now, that being the case, I think it's important when studying Vinaya texts to give the text its due. And this is, I think, a great flaw and problem in how many people approach Vinaya studies. What I mean by give the text its due is to look clearly, closely, literally, and specifically at what the thing actually says, without rushing to draw some kind of value judgment about what it means, what we should do, how we should apply it in our practice, or any of those kinds of things. This is a little bit like the idea in science that we should, you know, to try to look at things objectively. Of course, we know that we can't look at it 100% objectively, right? There's no, it's impossible. But at least we try, first of all, get an idea of what the thing actually says. Once we have a clear idea of what the thing actually says, we can then more meaningfully start to ask the question, what does it mean? How do we apply it? What are the practical implications? And so then we can discuss about it. And when we do it in that way, what we tend to find is that there's rather more agreement, not necessarily complete agreement, but rather more agreement in what the content of the rule actually says. Okay, so you can have a group of people in the room, they can all agree that it actually says such and such. Now, sometimes we might not agree on that. We might say this word is that word or is that word. So there might be some agreements, but generally they're fairly small. Most of the time we agree what the text actually says, and we might have different interpretations. So let's focus for a start on what the text actually says, and don't be in a hurry to try to draw conclusions from it. Our first point of entry is to say, what is this text actually saying? Okay? And put aside any questions of how do we practically apply it to start with. So that's how I would first approach Vinaya rules. The second point of interpretation is to start with the rule itself. So you remember that the rule is the rule. The rest of it isn't the rule. The rest of it is just the stuff around the rule. Okay? So that's the stuff in bold. There's a reason why it's in bold. It's because it's the thing. Okay? Everything else is about the thing. Right? Very likely, I think from a historical perspective, that the Vinaya rules, the Patimokkha rules and so on, were laid down by the Buddha. Most of the rest of the stuff probably wasn't. Now the purpose of the rest of the stuff in there, that's just my opinion, others will differ, but that's my opinion. The purpose of the rest of the stuff there is to help us to understand and practice the rule better. But if we can understand what the rule is saying just by reading the rule itself, then we don't need all of that other stuff. Okay? So there are cases where it's not really clear from the rule what it means. So for example, you might say there's a rule that says you shouldn't eat in the vikala. Okay? Vikala just literally means wrong time. And so unless we know some details, what does actually vikala mean in the Vinaya, we have to learn some interpretation, and then we say, oh, vikala is defined as being afternoon and before dawn. Oh, now we understand. So we need some interpretation to be able to make sense of the rule. In other cases, we don't. We can just read the rule, and it's perfectly transparent what it means, so there's no need to go on to further inquiry. But that's the rest of the text is there to help us. So in this particular case, this is one of the cases where we do need some more background, because the rule as it stands is not particularly transparent or obvious. Let me just read the rule in Pali. Yopana bhikkhu ratnam va ratna sammatam va ugandheva ganhateya va pacittiyanti. So should any bhikkhu pick up or cause to be picked up a jewel or treasure, or something reckoned as a jewel or treasure, then this is an offence of pachitya, requiring confession.
Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't say what is reckoned.
Yeah, ratna samatang.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So jewel or treasure.
Jewel or treasure, yeah. Ratna, that's what I was using, because it doesn't, it literally translated as jewel, but it doesn't just mean jewels in this context, it means something valuable. Yeah. So this is precisely why this particular rule does require some interpretation. The normal meaning of the word ratna, of course the triple gem, yeah, is the jewels. But as we'll see in the explanation for the rule, it's meant to have a broader context than that. It doesn't just mean jewels, but essentially means what you would translate in English as valuables. Okay? So... Sorry? Yes. Yes, well that would be a valuable, yes. Or something reckoned as a jewel. So that's kind of implied there. It's either literally a gem or something reckoned as a jewel. Okay. So we first of all get an idea of what the rule means from that. So basically it's talking about monastics for bhikkhus. In this case it's a rule which is shared between bhikkhus and bhikkhunis. So fair enough. There's nothing particular genderish about this rule. Okay, it's not a gendered idea. It's just saying that monastics shouldn't be picking up valuables. Now, of course, the immediate problem and the most difficult problem with this is, well, what exactly constitutes a valuable? Okay, because obviously there are things around the place which are worth. How do you determine what's a valuable, what's a ratna, and what isn't? So then we have to look more closely at how the rules discuss to help us to understand that better.
I'm a bit more confused by what does picking up mean.
Okay.
Does touching it mean picking up, or do you actually have to pick it up? If you put it right back, did you still pick it up?
Okay.
Does picking up actually mean taking with you?
Okay. So at what point is picking up becomes picking up? And these are, of course, all the legal issues which arise in Vinaya as a legal system. So on the, notice how on here that there's two things going on here. On one thing is like a general ethical principle, right? And so the general ethical principles is that monastics should live a simple life and that they shouldn't be, you know, having valuables and all of these kinds of things. So there's a general ethical principle. But then if you turn the Vinaya into a legal system, then you have to start drawing dividing lines and saying what is and what isn't allowable. And of course, that always must be somewhat arbitrary. So once we've looked at the rule itself, then we can have a look at the other material which is clustered around the rule. Generally speaking, we'd start, read it in the order that it's written, start with the background story, go on to look at the subsequent modifications to the rule, and then we'll have a look at the word definition and any non-offense clauses. So the various kinds of other apparatus which surround the rule. Sometimes those things are useful and helpful. Sometimes they're not particularly useful and helpful, so we have to see in a particular case. But usually they are, I have to say. Usually the background story and so on is useful.
One second, isn't there part of the rule that says all courses too?
Yep.
Does that mean if they're asked?
That's right, you make somebody else do it. Yeah, and I should have said, I was very remiss in the beginning. I should have said this is the initial formulation of the rule. This particular rule is reformulated twice, and the version I read out before was the initial formulation of the rule, not the final one. But it'll get a bit complicated if we go to that final one. So, I should follow that principle. We'll start with the final version of the rule. Should any bhikkhu pick up or have picked up a valuable or something reckoned as a valuable, except inside the monastery or the Jahavasata monastery is the inside the monastery, or I think it just means monastery. Monastery or dwelling, yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll have a look at that in more detail later. But anyway, inside the Arama, the monastery, or the Avasata, is the monastery precinct, perhaps, should pick up or have picked up the Pachiti offence, Ratna, and then it goes on to say that if they do pick up a valuable or something reckoned as a valuable inside the monastery or the monastery precincts, then they should put it to one side, thinking whoever owns it will take it. This is the proper course of action here. Okay, so the basic allowance in this rule is if you find something valuable in the property in the monastery, someone's left behind, say somebody goes off, they leave their handbag behind or something like that, then it's okay to pick it up and put it aside for safekeeping, but you're not thinking that it belongs to you. Yeah, so whoever it owns it, yasa bhavisati, they will take it, so harisati. So that does happen from time to time in a monastery. People go off and leave stuff behind. Yeah.
Can you just say the Nikki Pitava? Is that being put aside,
yep,
like in a general area or in your own kuti?
That word itself doesn't specify. Yeah, it just says it should put it away.
Well, in which monastic, why are they and which
But that one, you can pick it up. That's the purpose of the rule.
I don't pick it up, but because I don't wear with them.
But if you want to, you can. Then you go, oh, whippy, now I get to hold some gold ring.
You have to make
it
place it with me. You can see the cash box out in the office. They went away during the afternoon. And I should put this away to say keep them. Put them in the safe. Support was about exactly what the...
Yeah. And again, the petty cash doesn't belong to us. It belongs to the lay people or the lay committee. Yeah.
So that's not still covered with a rule against accepted then?
Yeah, that's the point of this rule, is to be an exception to that. Yeah.
Okay, because I would have thought that it would specify money if it was overriding generally the rule against.
Well, let's have a look more closely at the rule, and then it's all of those detailed areas, which is where the background stories and examples and so on can be useful. Okay, so then we come to the basic background story. On that occasion, the Buddha was staying in Savatthi, the Jetavana, in Anathapindika's monastery. On that occasion, a certain bhikkhu was bathing in the Atiravati River, and then a certain Brahmin came along with 500 tavikam. Put it aside, tavika, not sure what tavika is, put it aside on the bank of the river, and then went into the river to have a bath. And then that bhikkhu thought, then these tavikas, I don't know what a tavika is, let me have a look at it. Do we have a translation online of this? This is the problem with these things, I don't think we have a translation online. Yeah, it doesn't have a literal. It doesn't have the origin stories. Yeah, it doesn't. He might describe it, but he doesn't translate it. But I want the actual literal translation. Yeah, if you could do. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, this is why it's crazy. We don't have a translation of Vinaya online. It's madness. What's the time? Yeah, it is, but it's not complete. That was the one. Doesn't have the whole of the Vinaya on it, unfortunately. And I don't think it has the part that we're looking for. Padimokkha. Yeah, it just says the Padimokkha. Yeah, so it just says the actual Padimokkha rules, not the... And it has the Padimokkha and the Mahavagga and the Chulavagga. But it doesn't actually have the Vibhanga. So it's a kind of a scandal, actually. Yeah, it's terrible. Okay, so again, you wanted to know what the method is, so here's the method. Pali Dictionary. Type any word, go bingo. Oops, it's not there. I don't think it has diacritics. Does it? That's a little one. Doesn't have them, not on here. Tavika. Oh, it's not in the dictionary. It's containing. Let's try that. Okay. Ah, here we go. Tavika is maybe a purse. Ah, okay. I get probably a purse with 500 coins in it. So.
Yes,
pick up. Tavikam. So back to the rules. So a purse. I haven't forgotten it. In the while I was bathing, went away. Then the bhikkhu, thinking to myself, may this not be lost, took hold of it. Then that Brahman, having run back quickly, spoke to the bhikkhu, saying, "Did you see my purse?" And saying, "Handa Brahmana." He gave it to him, saying, "Here it is, Brahman." He gave it to him. Then that Brahman thought, "Now, by what upaya, okay, interesting use of the word upaya here, yeah, by what upaya, by what skillful means can I not give this bhikkhu the full reward for giving me my purse back?" Then he said, "Good sir, I didn't have 500 coins in this purse. I had 1,000 pieces in this coin." And then he grabbed hold of the monk, Pali Bundherwa, and then he let go of him. And that monk went to the monastery and told the bhikkhus. Okay, so the Brahmin obviously trying to kind of frighten the monk to shut up so he didn't have to give him a reward. Therefore the monk came under suspicion of being a thief, even though he hadn't done anything wrong. And then the Buddha said to him, did you pick this up? And he said, "Yes, I did." And so he says, "How can you, foolish man, such and such, such and such?" And so they down the rule, should any bhikkhu pick up or have picked up a valuable or something reckoned as a valuable, this is an offence of pachitya. Now that seems to answer or at least speak to a couple of those issues which were raised earlier. One issue about what actually picking up means, uganheya, so clearly from that he actually physically, he didn't just touch it or something like that, he actually grabbed it, picked it up. And also the thing about money, clearly it doesn't actually refer to the word for money in the origin story, but clearly that's what it's referring to. It's just an idiom in Pali that they use like this. They said, "Oh, we just had 500. So literally, what it says here is that a certain Brahmin left a 500 purse on the bank of the river. Yeah? Panchasatanang Tavika, a 500 purse. And so, but clearly it's an idiom for a purse with 500 coins in it. And that's quite a common idiom that just refers to, I think it's probably gahapanas, the unit of money meant, but it happens quite a lot in the Pali that they don't actually mention that, they just say the number. Purse of 500. Panchasatanang. Ah, yes, you're right, it is. It's a genitive, yeah. Purse of 500. So I think it would be accusative. Yeah. How much is a gahapana? Yeah. You can't. The values of things have changed so much. It's basically pretty hopeless trying to. It's probably not that different to a dollar. You know, I mean, someone's carrying around. It's a valuable purse with 500 gahapanas in it. Well, it's not like sort of Indonesian rupees, right? If someone's carrying a thing with 500 rupiah in Indonesia, I couldn't care less if it's lost or not. I'm going to use it for lighting a cigarette, right? 500's nothing. And it's clearly, you know, it's also, but it's got to be something which is, you know, small enough that you can physically carry around, right? So it can't be that much. So it's probably, you know, in the realm of being something not too different from being a dollar. You know, somebody might, a rich person might conceivably carry around $500, but they probably wouldn't carry, you know, $5 million. Yeah. Big number, yeah?
It's just very
Okay, so So that clears those rules up. But also notice, because you know, your original question is like, what's the method and so on. But also remember, again, with reference to the class on Hume, is that we don't come to too rapid conclusions about things. Okay, so the rule says picking it up, and it clearly means picking up. But perhaps there might be other cases that where the rule is transgressed, where you're not actually physically picking it up. But we haven't found one yet. Similarly, we've got some idea of what's meant by the ratna, right? A purse with 500 coins in it is a ratna. So we've got some idea what it might mean, but we're not going to rush to too many conclusions about what other things ratna might be. Okay, let's have a look at the next case. So then the rule is revised. Many of the rules in Vinaya are not revised, but there quite a few of them are, and this is one of the cases where the rule is revised. Okay, so on that occasion there was a festival in Sarvati. People, having adorned themselves with ornaments, went to the pleasure ground, to the Uyana. Visakha, Megara's mother, thinking, having adorned myself with ornaments, I'll go to the pleasure ground, left from the village thinking, when I go to the pleasure ground, what shall I do? What if I was to pay homage to Kaitai Hungari Sami? Kaitai Hungari Sami? What if I was to go and pay respects to the Buddha? And then she took off her jewellery, Bharana, Omuchitwa, and then she, having tied it up into a bundle with an upper robe, so interesting use here, her upper robe is the Uttara Sangha. She gave it to her maid, her dasi, Handaje imang bahandikang ganhahiti. So now you take this robe. So Handaje is an idiom. Je is a very informal sort of sense of you, only used when talking to maids or servants. Then Visakha, Megara's mother, approached the Buddha. Having approached, she greeted the Buddha, sat down on one side. She was sitting down. The Buddha gave her a talk on Dhamma. Then Visakha, Megara's mother, delighted by the Lord with talk on Dhamma, rising up from her seat, greeted the Buddha, departed, keeping her right side towards him. It's kind of an interesting note about behavior. Obviously, she didn't have to take those jewels and so on off. You know, she's not a monastic. But she thought, just as a mark of respect, that she'd not go to see the Buddha while being fully adorned with all her jewels. Then the slave woman, having forgotten that bundle, went away. So dasi tang bandikang visaritva. Adamasi, so it's vi saritva, it's having forgotten it. Vi sarita, misremembered. Monk, having seen it, told the Buddha. The Buddha said, well, bhikkhu, having picked it up, put it to one side, put it away. Pick it up and put it away. And the Buddha on this occasion, in this connection, addressed the bhikkhu saying, allow bhikkhus, having picked up or having caused someone to pick up a in the monastery, to lay it aside, thinking it will be for him who will take it, and this was the rule of training came to be set forth. Well, that's interesting. That's curious. I hadn't noticed that before. Interesting that in the back, this phrase here, that you should put it to one side, thinking whoever owns it should take it. Yeah, this is the Buddha's giving in this allowance here before this first reformulation of the rule. But actually the phrase itself is not included in the reformulation of the rule. It's only included down here. It's curious, isn't it? Yeah, it's actually very unusual. Normally if the Buddha rephrases it, of course it would be in the rule straight away. So there's a little editorial malfunction there, it would seem. But anyway, the intent of the rule is straightforward enough. And in that case, clearly, Visakha had and the maid were in the monastery visiting the Buddha when they put the put the cloth containing the jewels to one side. So the Buddha says to the bhikkhu, okay, put it away. Doesn't specify, so the question was asked, does it specify, what does that mean exactly? It doesn't really say. But perhaps later on we might know more about that. So then we go on to the second reformulation of the rule. Now at that time in the Khasi country, an Atapindika had some business on in a certain village. A servant or a student was spoken to by the householder, saying, if the reverend sirs come, you should make a meal for them. Now at that time, several monks working on alms tour in the Khasi country came up to the village where an Atapindika was doing business. That man saw the monks coming from afar. Seeing them, he approached those monks. Having approached and greeted them, he spoke thus, venerable sirs, let the masters consent to the householder's meal for tomorrow. The monks consented by being silent. Then that man at the end of that day, having had good food prepared, announced the time, took off a finger ring. Anguli Muddikam. So it's an Anguli Muddika is the finger ring. Having served those monks with the meal, said, having eaten, let the masters go away and I will go back to business. Having forgotten his finger ring, he went away. The monks, having seen it, saying, well, if we go away, this finger ring will be lost, sat still just there. Then that monk, returning from business, having seen those monks, spoke thus, one of sirs, why are the masters sitting still just here? Then those monks told this matter to the man, went to Savati and told the Buddha. The Buddha then addressed the bhikkhu, saying, allow monks, having picked up or having caused someone to pick up treasure or valuables, what belongs to valuable that's within a monastery or within a house. Okay, so that's answered the question about what avasata means in this context. It clearly means in the house. Laid aside, thinking it will be him who will take it. Thus this rule of training should be set forth. And so then finally we have the whole rule presentation. Should any bhikkhu, should they pick up or have picked up a valuable or something reckoned as a valuable, except if it's in a house, sorry, in the monastery or in the house, it's offensive paccitya. If they have picked up a valuable or something reckoned as a valuable in a monastery or in a house, then they should put it to one side, thinking whoever owns it will collect it. This is the proper course here. Well, again, remember what I said before. Give the text its due. We haven't finished reading the rule yet, yeah? So we don't expect to answer all our questions before we've read the thing, yeah? So that's exactly what I was meaning with that, because when we're reading it, all of these doubts come up, questions come up, and so on. So we have to learn, it's a discipline we have to learn, is to put those things to one side. Look at it, what does it actually say? And spend time with that. Don't be in a rush to ask all of those questions. Spend time with figure out what is it actually saying. Okay, so then we'll go, let's have a look at the Vibhanga. Yopana. Yopana bhikkhu. Okay, this is always explained in every rule, whatever bhikkhu. Ratnang. Okay, so now we have a definition of ratnang, and it's a very interesting little definition. It's got a lot of words here which are not necessarily very common. Ratnang means mutta. So what's mutta? No, it doesn't mean mother. Mutta. Urine. Mutang means urine. Perhaps it doesn't mean that in this context. Pearl. Pearl. Money. Which is etymologically related to which English word?
Money.
Oh, that's just so, that's just so insightful. Okay, money, excellent. So, but money generally means a jewel, here translated as crystal, jewel or gem. Beluria. Oh, that's curious. Translates it as lapis lazuli, but it's usually translated as beryl, which is the actual etymological connection. Beryl, Beluria. Mother of pearl, Sunkor. Sila is quartz, translated as quartz, although Sila just means rock.
So gemstone.
Gemstone, something like that, some of the gemstone quartz, probably quite a good translation. Pavalang, coral. Yeah. Rajatam, gold. Jatarupam, silver. No, it should be the other way around, isn't it? Isn't Jatarupa gold? Jatarupa. I think Jatarupa is gold, isn't it? Isn't that right? I think Jatarupa is gold. It's so long since I've looked at this. Sorry?
Is that where the word rupee comes from?
Where are we now? Oh, I've lost it now. Sorry. Jatarupa. There's the word rupee is literally related to the word rupee is there's a word for money meaning is rupiah. Yeah, whether it's actually related to that usage or not, I'm not sure. Jata rupa. Pure metal, gold in its natural state, yeah. Suwana is worked gold, so yeah, I always thought that was gold. So Jatara Rajata is silver. They've got it just backward a punch in the translation. Jatarupa, so Rajatang is silver, Jatarupa is gold. Lohitanka. Lohitanka is ruby. From Lohita, red. And Masaragala. Of course, is obvious. Translated here as cat's eye. Whatever cat's eye is. What's cat's eye?
It's
some kind of gem or something?
That reflects the light, it's kind of tan color, that reflects the light in a way that kind of looks like a cat's eye glowing in the dark.
Okay. Okay, so there you go. So basically, Radhanang here is translated as close in meaning to gem, although it doesn't, isn't it not just gems, but also precious metals. Yeah, so perhaps translated as gems and precious metals, most literal
precious
translation.
And stones,
yeah. So that's, and not just the stones, but also pearls, stone-like. Okay, so Radhanang, Ratna Samatang, so what is reckoned as a valuable, is that which is of profit, so that is that which for people, for peoples, persons, upari bhoga pari bhogang, whatever is valuable or profitable or useful. Okay?
So if you were like visiting a prison and you happen in a box of like cigarettes, which is like currency, then you'd have to like, oh,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, yeah, except prison's not a home or a...
Like a home for prisoners.
Yeah, in that case, I suspect that one possibly wouldn't go around picking up somebody else's box of cigarettes in the prison. That might be... But the point is correct, though. Basically, anything which people reckon is valuable.
What if
you're
given something that people reckon
is
valuable?
Put it down.
That's another rule. Well, that's another rule. That's not this specific rule, yeah? It's not about when you're given something, it's about when something's left around.
Okay.
Yeah. So, okay, so. So yeah, so this rule doesn't necessarily, I mean, it's an interesting point though, that from those definitions, anything which is reckoned as valuable, what is a ratna is not, or ratna samatha is not necessarily what's covered by the other rules dealing with money. I mean, obviously it would include money, but it might also include things which were reckoned as valuable, but which were still allowable on principle to monastics. So, say for example, something like a finely carved wooden Buddha image, an antique wooden Buddha image, for example. So this obviously is not unallowable intrinsically. You might debate whether a golden Buddha image is allowable, but certainly a wooden one wouldn't be. It might be very valuable as an antique, but it's something that monastics can pick up and so on. But generally speaking, that would still come within this rule as being something, if it was just left around or whatever, that you should put it away for safekeeping.
So if you find like somebody's letter and you put it in the thing, is that a violation of the rule?
Well, I think that we know it's, you're putting it in Nikipitabang, it's being put away, it's a safe place, yeah.
That makes sense,
right?
Put it out of the way somewhere.
Yeah.
If you put it in the office, it'd probably be...
Because whoever doesn't come and claim it, yeah.
Yeah?
If the thing just eats it, though, well...
Yeah, but that's up to the thing.
That is.
But if you see it in, like, the laptop left in the library, should you put it away?
Yeah, according to... I mean, if you think that the person who owns it has, you know, just gone off and left it, then yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you think they've just popped out of the room to go to the loo or something, it's different. Yeah. So it tends not to be big things like that, but it tends to be, most of the time in my examples I've seen, is like those things we're talking about, like rings or... those kinds of small things people can take off or lose fairly easily. I mean, these days a mobile phone would probably be quite common, something like that.
Like glasses?
Glasses could be, yeah.
But the rule is saying that this is the exception, but does it expect you that you actually, there's something you have to do?
That's right, it's saying, it is saying you should do it, yes. Yeah. It's saying, having picked it up, you should put it away.
In this limited.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't say you should pick it up, does it?
Doesn't say you should pick it up. It's kind of implied duty. It certainly says once you've picked it up, you have the duty to put it away properly.
Yeah.
But it doesn't say that you should pick it up. So, but I think it definitely is an implied duty. You know, the Buddha told that because with Visakha's stuff to put it away.
Right, what can
you
do
on that? Yeah. So if you find a wallet on the street, say you find a credit card on the street and you pick it up and you find the owner of it, then have you violated this rule by picking up a treasure?
I think so, yeah, because it's in the street. Anyway, we're disobeying the rule of procedure that I've tried to be insisting on from the beginning, which is to stick with the text, yeah? Okay, so anyatra ajharama wa ajavasatava, except for in the monastery and the home, and then that's just translated by tapetwa. It's just another way of saying except. Adharamo. And I don't want to read too much into it, but that's an interesting kind of gloss on it, because it's one of those things that you tend to skip over because it's kind of meaningless. But the very fact that it's meaningless is actually, I think, quite meaningful. Why do you say, Abhihorn is translated as, except within a monastery or within a house means setting aside within a monastery within a house. So she's just trying to translate it into English. But the what it suggests to me when you see this kind of translation is that it's explaining an idiom to people who aren't necessarily familiar with the dialect. So it's eliminating ambiguity. Anyatra, ajharama, it's a common idiom, but it is an idiomatic usage. Tapetwa, sort of helps to eliminate the ambiguity. So it seems to me that this kind of gloss is a sign of a sort of clarifying the meaning of words for people who aren't necessarily familiar with the local idioms and local dialect.
So all you need is a petty bug, so if you don't know the meaning.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly the case in the commentaries, where you see that a lot. And you assume that the bhikkhus who were studying the commentaries were also using it to learn Pali. and it's much less prominent in the canon, but perhaps, not necessarily, but perhaps that's what this thing is here for. Anyway, moving on. So, I'm just suggesting that when you see things that are actually meaningless like that, it's an actual meaningless gloss, then the purpose of it is not to try to explain the word. She translated as except for setting in a monastery or a house, setting aside in a monastery or a house, or leaving aside the case of in a monastery and a house. But she's just trying to render it in a English idiom, but you can't really do it because it's just, you're just substituting synonyms. That's all.
Is it possible that Beckford was mentioning it somewhere? Was translated before?
It's possible, although the whole tradition says that all the text was kept in Pali the whole time,
right.
And there doesn't seem to be any good reason to doubt it.
Okay.
More likely it would be clarifying for the bhikkhus from different districts in India.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my suspicion. Ajharamo, inside a monastery, means inside a bounded or a fenced monastery, or in a monastery which is unfenced in the region or in the precinct. No, the neighbourhood, the grounds, the grounds, the region, the upachara. Is the Pali word. So if you've got a fence around the monastery, then it's pretty straightforward. It's just anywhere that's inside the fence. And if it's aparikita, if it doesn't have a fence, so Santi Monastery doesn't have a fence, so it's in the upachara, so it's generally the monastery grounds. Actually, that might apply slightly differently today. I mean, if you're in a forest monastery where you're living in, you know, I mean, often even in Thailand and so on, for example, when I stayed at Pujamgom, you know, we lived in a certain area, but it was just national park, and we had permission from the national parks to stay there. But you know, there wasn't any, you know, really clearly defined boundaries for the monastery. So this is what that upachara is referring to. The way you determine the upachara is described in some other places. Sometimes it says it's far enough you throw a clod of earth. So if you sort of stand at the furthest kuti and then throw a lump of earth as far as you can, then that's the upachara of that particular monastery.
The surroundings.
Yeah, just the general surrounding area, yeah. I'm not sure. You could argue that either of those would apply today. Say, in a place like Santi, we don't actually have a wall, so you could say it's not parikita. But on the other hand, the monastery grounds very well defined legally. So you could say, well, it's as if it's parikita, but anyway. Not on, well, I mean, we don't actually on the cliff side, not really, yeah. I mean, in theory we do, but in practice we don't, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, anyway. Ajha wasatha, in the house, in a walled house is inside the house, or in a unwalled house is in the area around it, the upachara. So it's not really defining what an avasata is and what an arama is. It assumes you know that. It's defining what it means inside means. Uganheya means if you grab it yourself. Is pachidya. Uganhabeya means if you get another one, make another one to grab it, then it's pachidya. Okay, then it goes on to define in more detail. What is the ratnangwa panabhikkhu ratna sammatangwa ajharameva ajhavasateva ugehevava ganhapevava nikipita bante? If you do pick it up inside a village, sorry, inside a monastery or inside a house, if you pick it up or have it picked up and you should put it away, what does that mean? What it means is this. Having made a mark by a form or by a sign, okay? So, rupena, okay, by some kind of rupa. Could be just like a picture or something like that. A nimitta. It's useful to see the usage of the words here. So, nimitta here just meaning sign. So, you make a sanyanam, you make a sanya. Gatwa. So you make a sign. Basically, you leave a note, exactly. That's what you're doing, you're leaving a note. Remove the sign, having put it to one side, put it away. An arrow putting it, it could be anything, yeah. Put a piece of cloth there. And then you should announce it saying, let him who come. Okay, so yasa bahandang natang, so whoever's lost their stuff, may they come. If he comes there, it should be said to him, sir, if somebody comes, then you should say to them, my friend, what kind of thing was your stuff? If he succeeds by obtaining them by the form or by the sign, they should be given to him. Oh, hang on. No. Sorry, that's misunderstood. I misunderstood that whole thing. I haven't read this for ages, so that's actually an interesting point. No, what's it actually saying is something quite different. It's not saying put a mark on it. What it's saying is by its appearance or by some characteristic, you should perceive or recognize. So having recognized it by some appearance or characteristic, you should put it away. In other words, you should notice, oh, this is a silver cup with somebody's name inscribed on it, or something like that. You should put it away. You should announce, whoever owns this, may they come. Then when they come, you say to them, what kind of thing was your stuff? Then if they explain to you the correct appearance or correct sign of the thing, okay, then they should be given to him. Databang. If he doesn't get the signs right, he should be said to him, examine them, sir. He should be said to him, vichinahi. In setting out from that residence, he may set out having deposited them in the hands of those who are there suitable monks, but if the monks are not suitable, he may set out having deposited them in the hands of those who are suitable householders. Okay, so if you're leaving, then you can leave it in under the responsibility of other suitable bhikkhus, or if there's no bhikkhus, then householders. No, that's a very curious thing here. Of course, the last bit is very curious. You should say, investigate it. If he doesn't get it, you should say, investigate it. Vichinahi.
Keep looking.
Maybe, yeah.
Check it out. This isn't yours.
Vichinahi. What exactly does that mean? Vichinahi. Vichinati. Investigate, examine, discriminate. Vichi. Okay. Nuteya, discriminate. Careful, discriminate. Careful. That's not entirely clear to me. Does anyone know what that means in that context? Or investigate it.
To look for. Meaning number two? No, there's one and two.
It's already been found.
Which one? You mean here?
Seeking symptoms in the bottom. To look for, to seek Kalanga truths.
Yeah?
Does that mean keep looking for yourself?
Keep looking.
Yeah, keep seeking.
Keep looking. So if he describes it correctly, you give it to him. If he doesn't describe it correctly, you say, keep looking.
Yeah?
Yeah? Maybe.
I've heard you got a wallet with a pen in it. Do you mind if I look at it? Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, it wasn't brown, it was black. Yeah, it was black one.
Yeah. So, that seems like a reasonable way, yeah? Yeah. It's similar. There's an idiom that's used elsewhere, janahi. Yeah, you should know about that. Yeah, meaning something like similar, something like, you know, you should reflect on it or you should investigate that. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I think there's probably something in the commentary about it. So this is the proper course here. Is explained by saying this is what is in accordance with the Dhamma. Then there are non-offence clauses. So various non-offences listed at the end. So there's no offence if having picked up a valuable or something reckoned as a valuable in a monastery or in a house, if you put it away thinking its owner will collect it. There's no offence if you pick up something reckoned as a valuable, something taken on trust. That's curious. We saw some. Something taken on trust. What does that mean? Maybe.
Could be asked to transport it for them.
Maybe. This sounds like it's not talking about transporting, just picking up. But yeah, something that's taken on trust. Yeah. So somebody, maybe somebody has to leave something with you for some reason. So they've asked you to look after something. Yeah. Some cases that might happen. Maybe.
I suppose one should be something, but
no, taking it on trust isn't giving it to you.
Ask you to carry it or something. So the taking on trust also was used when, if you took the alms food that was intended for someone else and you thought that it was...
I'm not sure. I thought taking on trust was usually for like borrowing things that were durable. I can't recall that, whether it was used for alms food. Maybe.
Like if you took someone else's food and then they accuse you of paranoia because you took their food, yeah. You're like, no, I took it on trust.
Would that be considered a jewelry?
Yeah. Sure, yeah, yeah.
I just thought that same phrase might have been.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if you had a jewel or something of value, though, that wouldn't be alms food.
No,
it's just an example, yeah.
What if somebody like gives you their purse saying, oh, I have to tie my shoelaces, hold this for a minute.
Yeah, except it's not actually what it's saying. It's saying you pick it up taking it on trust. So taking it on trust means you think they won't mind and you pick it up. No, no, again, they're not giving it to you. You're taking it on trust. I'm staying at Giles's house, and he's got, a gold-plated clock, and I need a clock so I can see what time it is. So for the Pali class, so I pick up his gold, solid gold clock, and take it with me to the Pali class, thinking, oh, he won't mind. Sure. I'm just wondering what the exact situation it's thinking about in this case. Yeah. That's true. That is, yeah. The problem is the other ones are also a bit weird. Okay, that's true. No, thank you for that. Yes, breaking the rule. The other rule of interpretation, which we should really follow, is that you don't ever conclude anything without reading all of the Chinese Vinayas. Which means you never basically reach any conclusion about anything. Okay, so tavakalikam ganhati means you pick it up temporarily, just for the occasion.
And you just pick it up and put it back down. Keep reading.
Pamsakula sanyisa, you pick it up thinking that it's rag robes. Yeah, you think it's a cast off. Yeah? Sure, why not? Yeah, why not? Yeah. Yeah, someone's just left a bag lying around. Oh, you think, oh, there's nothing to it. You know, pick it up and it's got money in it or something. And then the usual exceptions if you're mad or if you're the first offender. So I think the Pamsakula Sanyisa is pretty straightforward. That if you perceive that it's a cast off, then you're not really perceiving that it's valuable. So I think that's fair enough. But I'm not really sure what these things are. For example, the picking up something temporarily, I mean, surely that's what the whole case of everything was. You know, you're picking up something. No one in that whole thing was thinking, I'm going to pick this up permanently and take it for myself.
Well, okay, let's say that you had seen Visakha's big bundle of jewels, and you just moved it from here to there, even though at that point she hadn't accidentally left it. Let's say that she's having the interview with the Buddha. It hasn't been abandoned, but you just move it from here to there because you're sweeping.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just moving it temporarily, but not intending to set it aside. It's not
maybe, yeah.
Could you do that with the donation box? You know, you have the donation box sweep underneath and put it back on?
Sounds like it, yeah. Right. Yeah.
The donation box is within the monastery. It's in the monastery.
So it's all right anyway.
It's temporary.
But I thought it's only all right.
Sure.
To put it aside and it's in the
monastery. Yeah. Right. So, no, the case applies either in a monastery or in a house. Okay,
right.
So it doesn't apply in public areas,
yeah.
But applies in a monastery or in the house. For a donation box, you can see the kinds of examples that it's thinking of. It's thinking of the example where somebody's accidentally left something behind and you're putting it aside for safekeeping. That's basically what the rule's about. It's not really about donation boxes, which are something, it's a somewhat different case. But nevertheless, I think that the Tavakalikam Ganhati is probably more applicable in that case with something like a donation box, yeah? That you're just, you know, if you just want to do the cleaning, you just pick it and put it to one side and dust behind it and then put it back again. So you're not, there's no thought that, you know, I'm going to have it or anything like that.
And I'm trying to move more on the clock, yeah?
But I think the trust thing.
Yeah.
It's only another thing for the context of the role. It's not another thing for genuine behavior, right?
Uh-huh.
So I think it must mean a yoga like mind if I move it or something like that. Or if I like bring it to them or something. That's what the old trusting means, isn't it? It means that they'll be okay with this. I don't think it can be other things as well.
The main rule seems to be is talking about a case where you perceive that the owner has forgotten it.
Right.
So this maybe would apply in a case where you don't necessarily perceive that they've forgotten it. So you're not necessarily putting it aside for safekeeping.
Right.
So that would be hence the example of Charles's gold clock.
Well, so maybe you see their new gadget and you play with it for a few minutes to see how it works and so it's that.
Mm-hmm.
Like you know, like a nice, and you just like use it for a minute and put it back. Because
yeah.
Assuming, because you know the person, they know you. Like,
right.
I don't mind if I mess with this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe
so
you pick up.
Like that guy, he won't mind if I do this.
Or if you pick up a Buddha statue in someone's house or something like that to have a look at it or something.
Mm-hmm. This might just be referring to relative innocent actions, basically.
Yeah.
Might be construed as
something like that, but again, to come back to this kind of methodological point, you know, so we reach this point with the anapattis, with the non-offences, where we're actually not 100% clear exactly what that means in that context. We've got some kind of idea, and it's clear enough what the kinds of things that it's talking about are, yeah. But exactly what that means, then we've now come to that realm of interpretation and so on. So we have to just be a little bit, just to remember that we always have to be a bit humble about these things. We take the text, we give the text its due, and we take it as far as we reasonably can, and then we just say, okay, from here on, it's interpretation.
Do you
have
another point?
Sorry, I don't understand. Temporarily, yeah.
Yeah, and you will have it in a few moments after that.
It can be, although Tavakalika doesn't necessarily mean in just a few moments. For example, there's cases in the Vinaya where you can hire things, so things which are available for hire will be Tavakalika. So you might hire it for a day. So Tavakalika just means for a temporary or short term. Doesn't necessarily. I mean, yes, that's Tavakalika. But I think also of saying, oh, I'll just use this laptop for this class and then give it back, I think that would also be Tavakalika.
Does that still include the context of cause too? Because if you were asked...
I think all of them would, yeah. It always repeats this. And that's very common in the Vinaya, yeah.
Think of those, if this was only for reconditioned state, it's not variables themselves. Before those other things forces.
Oh, right. Okay, yes, so the but something which is a valuable surely is reckoned as valuable as well.
Well, things that you don't feel in different categories. Things which are like actually genes and jewels, that mean things that people value a lot in a similar way, mm-hmm. but aren't actually those things.
So you have their granny's napkin on the
Yeah, but.
Icons and.
Yeah, sure, but jewels are reckoned as jewels are what are useful and beneficial and considered valuable by people. So Ratna Samatanga I think would include Ratna. I don't think they're separate.
Uh huh. Uh-huh. Sentimental value. Also, yeah.
I don't want to let people, but I mean, so I had a question earlier.
You have this ambiguity by just reading the text.
Yeah.
Then what's your next step?
Okay, so then the next step, ideally, your next step would be to refer to the Chinese veneers.
Okay.
Yeah, and Sanskrit veneers. Because that's the oldest record, the most authentic record that we have. And sometimes you find that they will clear up areas of unclarity and ambiguity in the Pali quite nicely. Sometimes they don't, but sometimes they do.
Because they're more detailed or something?
No, it's not necessarily that they're more detailed. In some cases they might be more detailed, in some cases they might be less detailed. But it's just that they might just give a different example or discuss things from a slightly different point of view. Or they might, you know, they'll have like this word analysis, but they might analyze the words in a slightly different way that might may or may not be helpful in a particular context.
So is that also available online?
In Chinese only?
Have
yeah.
Translated into English?
None of the early veneers, apart from the Pali, have been translated into English.
So practically speaking, how does that actually help you if you don't read Chinese?
Practically speaking, it shows you that if you want to study veneers seriously, you have to learn Chinese.
Although, my dad was like, you really learn Chinese?
That's right, your dad was right.
We have the whole Indian translation. I saw it in Vinaya.
Yes, we have the whole.
The whole part of the Vinaya.
We have the
Indian translation of Chinese Vinaya.
Yes, but that's only the Bhikkhuni Vinaya.
Yeah.
Bhikkhuni Vinaya, not the Bhikkhu Vinaya.
Yeah, both Bhikkhu and Bhikkhuni Vinaya.
No.
I saw the person translate.
And Hyman. Yes, it's the Bhikkhuni Vinaya. Yeah. It's not the Bhikkhu Vinaya.
Not Bhikkhu Vinaya.
No.
In Vietnamese.
In Vietnamese, you can know Vietnamese.
So, but the
easy.
Translation, the environment is complete?
No, it's Bhikkhuni Vinaya.
Well, exactly. But I mean,
it's not just one Bhikkhuni.
Yeah, but it's in just that part, is it complete? It has to be bound, it has
to. Yeah. So that there's a Bhikkhuni Vinaya translations from that the Dhammaguptaka and also from the Mahasanghika. So that's actually, they're both very useful. But yeah, we don't have the full complete translations of the whole Vinayas, unfortunately. Yeah.
So when the Chinese give one type of origin story,
mm-hmm.
the Pali give another type,
mm-hmm.
and they have different explanation of the. Of the words
mm-hmm.
in the rule,
yep.
then you just become awfully confused and don't want to conclude.
Well, that can be the case, yes. Yeah. So that's a step forward in wisdom. Yeah. And so going from a state of not of thinking that you know, to a state of realizing that you don't know, then that's an advance. So. Yeah.
So. Is there not at no point at which you would check the commentary?
Oh, I haven't got onto that. Yeah, but yes, you're right. That would be another thing. Yes. Yeah, but we haven't got there yet. Yeah, we're still working on it.
Of course, we try the Chinese video.
If possible, yeah. Yeah.
Chinese.
The other thing that we can do. I mean, what is available? Yes, the Bhikkhuni Vinayas, there's a couple of translations available. There's also Pachau's excellent book, which translates or gives a comparative study of all of the Padimokkhas. So even though you don't have all the Vibhangas, at least you have the Padimokkhas with all the relevant differences which he's noted. So that's valuable, and that's something which is easy enough to do.
What's his name?
Pachau. Pachau. It sounds like a kind of an exclamation in a Batman comic, doesn't it? Biff Bam Pachau. Yeah, so that's useful. Having done that, then the next course of action, if it's still unclear, would be to look in the commentaries. The commentaries are available online in Pali.
Okay.
But the Vinaya commentary has not been translated into... not been translated into... into English or any modern language, as far as I'm aware. Oh, actually, the Chinese version has been. Yeah. Sudarsana Vinayavibhasa was translated into Chinese, and that has been translated into English. So we actually have that. So there are various things, and then of course you have the modern commentaries. So anyway, if anybody wants to look at the commentaries, this is how you find it online, Tipitaka.org. You go into Tipitaka, here's the Mula, it's the canon, Atthakatha is the commentary, Vinaya Pitaka, here's the Paticitiya commentary, bingo, and here's the bit we're at, is the Paticitiya Kandang, and that will hopefully come up in a minute, and we'll find the relevant rule, Rapdana Samatha. Okay, Ratna Sikapadam. Okay, so here's the commentary on what is the taking on trust. Interesting, it doesn't have a comment on the bit about picking it up temporarily, but on the taking on trust it does have a comment, and I'm not sure if I can understand it, but anyway, picking up on trust, Aditu, for example, Amasmeva Sandhaya Vuttam, spoken in connection with Amasa. With what is intrinsically allowable to be touched, what is touchable. Anamasam na vatti yeva, it doesn't apply in the case of what is untouchable. So this is referring to the list of the, I think, 10 untouchable things. Guns, musical instruments, money, women. I just thought I'd throw that one in there. And various other things. So there's a list of 10 things for bhikkhus which are intrinsically untouchable, according to the commentaries. So here, again, just to explain the methodology, now we're looking at the commentary. Now, the commentary's aim is to help us to understand what the text is saying, right? But the commentary also introduces a number of new concepts and ideas which are not actually found in the early texts. And it's important to be familiar with those ideas because the commentary will use them to explain the texts, and it's very often those ideas which determine the modern interpretation of Vinaya rules. So it's important that we be familiar with that, because that's how we can understand why, in certain cases, there is a difference between what the rule says and what the modern practice is. Now, in this case, this is invoking this particular commentarial category, is the anamasa. And the anamasa is these 10, I think, untouchable things. Again, to repeat the list, I'm not sure if anyone... can anyone remember the whole list? Is guns and weapons is one of them. Money, I think, is another. Probably gold.
Liquor.
Probably liquor, yeah. Is it women's clothing? Yeah, maybe. Musical instruments, dangerous things like that. Guns, guitars, and girls. Okay? Basically. So.
That word, anamasa, doesn't show up in the Vinaya?
It doesn't show up. It might be in the Vinaya, but it's not in that in that way, yeah. And it overextends some things. So the rule saying you can't touch a musical instrument, I don't believe is found in the Vinaya. The rule that a bhikkhu can't touch a woman is not found in the Vinaya. The Vinaya says you shouldn't touch a woman out of lust, but doesn't say you shouldn't touch. So it definitely has changed. Now, remember the example that we were talking about before. And I said that taking on trust might mean picking up Giles's solid gold clock. Okay? Now, if we were to accept this commentarial explanation, then that wouldn't apply because gold is anamasa. So gold, what this would be saying would be excluding that. It's saying, no, that's not an exception. I couldn't pick up Giles's clock because that's anamasa. Whereas, for example, he might have a valuable clock that's not made of gold. So it's not anamasa, so that one I could pick up. Even though it might be actually worth more in monetary value, it might be a special designer clock something, might be worth more than one that happens to be made of gold, but because gold is anamasa, according to this interpretation, then I couldn't pick that up.
So that agrees with my interpretation that it's valuable to things, regardless of the secret things, rather than regardless of the
No, this is because anamasa is not the same as either valuables or reckoned as valuables.
What's that?
Anamasa isn't.
No, the anamasa are valuables.
Not always.
Yeah,
and other things, yeah. Valuables. So?
And
include
some things reckoned as valuables, but some things not reckoned as valuables at all.
Yeah.
Not valuable
at all. Yeah.
But I think the point here is that they'd be referring to those things which were in that list and the valuables like gold and money and jewels.
Yeah.
So if Giles
anyway,
you take my special designer clock to the top of you, then that would be okay.
Like, yeah, the point of this is that he doesn't even have to say that.
Okay.
You just pick it up thinking he's not going to mind.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then the rest of the comment says the rest of it is already explained. So that's basically the only comment on that rule. So it just clarifies that, but it doesn't actually explain what the taking on trust thing is all about. It merely says that that doesn't include things which are untouchable.
So if somebody leaves their Stradivari violin
in the...
So you can't
move it. No, and this is only talking about the taking on trust exception.
Oh.
Doesn't apply generally to the whole rule. So yes, Stradivarius violin is fine to put that away. Unless it might mention it earlier. But anyway, this is only, again, this is the commentary on.
So what about in situations that there are things that wouldn't be comments on in the time of the commentary or in the Vipassana?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And so instead of someone's dwelling, what about in their car? It's kind of still within somebody's property.
Right.
Something that are in their boat.
Right.
Or something
like that. Yeah, that's a good example because in the time of the Buddha those things generally would have been unsecured. Whereas these days they are quite secure. So a cart or a chariot would not have been a secure place for keeping valuables, but it's quite common these days people will keep a laptop or a mobile phone or a purse or something in their car. Again, this is where we depart from the text and move into that area of commentary. So you can say, if you want, you could interpret and say, well, it functions in some ways that's similar. Some people live in cars. They do. People live in cars. It's got not uncommon. Yeah. So some people live in cars, and cars in some ways are treated in that way that's similar. It's a safe place to leave possessions. Well, though it's not really considered as safe as a house. You don't say safe as cars, do you? You say safe as houses.
Safe as houses, my car.
Yeah.
But it's not even they have to live there. But maybe you're just in the car, and then their clothes is underneath the chair.
Right. Yeah.
So do you just assume it's okay to pick up and just when they, you know, go off somewhere with their credit card and forgot their purse?
Yeah, presumably if it's their car, it wouldn't matter. If it's somebody else's car, you might.
Yeah, or belong to the person.
Yeah, they might leave it in the monastery car.
Right? Yeah. Whose house doesn't have to be belong to?
It sounded like it was the layperson's house.
If you see them leave their own
stuff
in their house, why would you
mess with
it?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Whose house wasn't? I think that look, from the case, it's not entirely clear, but it seems to be that it was his house. But maybe it wasn't like in a secure setting. It might be, for example, that was a fairly wealthy man. He's doing business with an Atapindika, so often they'd have servants around. Their, you know, houses aren't necessarily that private or that secure, so maybe they were thinking, oh, people are going to be coming and going, and he's left this thing out. I mean, I know that, say, when my mother and stepfather were living in Malaysia, and they'd have like a cleaner and so on who'd come and clean the house, and they'd always be very careful to put any possessions away in the safe. You know, they wouldn't leave them lying around. Yeah. So I think that's probably what you're referring to.
So with the car example, like what actually happened was that we were sitting in the back seat, yeah, and then the driver lady's car purse was like on the thing between the two front seats,
uh-huh.
And then when the car bumps, you know, it fell down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, well, I mean, the nice and normal thing to do would be to help put the bag up.
Yep.
And
yep.
Supposed to be like, I'm a precious victim, kind of thing. And so, like,
I'm going to turn into a ferocious green-eyed monster with,
yeah,
with tentacles.
Great. But then I remember you said, well, the rule actually says pick up. So in a situation like that.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say?
Well, I think that would come under Tavakalikam, wouldn't it? Just temporarily, just putting it back in place.
So we're sure that's what Tavakalikam means temporarily?
I mean, Tavakalikam definitely means temporarily, yeah.
Okay.
It does seem like a reasonable interpretation of another piece.
Yeah.
It's not like a gushing rule or something.
No.
It's not like it's doing something bad.
Yeah, and it's quite different. Like if it's different. Thinking it like that is different from if say you're driving in the monastery car with somebody, you know, and then they get out and they've left their wallet behind and they go off, and then you pick up something thinking, you might not be thinking you're picking up temporarily, you know, it might be, you know, you might be never seeing that person again. I mean, you might drop them off at the train station, you know, they're going off. And so Tavakalikanga, I think that's what it would mean, is a case exactly like you're talking about. Yeah.
What about if the case of someone just gave you a box of money and you don't know it's money,
mm-hmm.
and then you open it and you thought, oh, then why would you confess as this rule?
If it's money,
like, you know, why would you confess as picking up valuable instead of money?
Perception is not mentioned as a factor in this rule. Well, I don't know. In this particular rule, doesn't mention knowing it or perception. Except, no, it doesn't. No, only at the end if you perceive that it's cast off. That's okay, but that's the only mention of perception.
If you get given a box with a question mark on it,
yeah,
and then you're curious, so you look in the box, and then you realise it's money, have you broken a rule by looking in the box? By thinking, oh, I wonder what's in here?
Uh-huh.
It might be expensive, it could be a heavy box of rocks, it could be anything, but even looking in there to find out, hey,
mm-hmm.
You know, ooh, why don't they know
you? Yeah, well, I mean, that would seem to be. I mean, again, this is all I can say is that, you know, this is where you come to the point where you have to sort of leave the literal interpretation comes to an end. It many rules in the Vinaya will mention perception, so they'll say, you know, how do you perceive it is a critical factor. This particular rule doesn't. So you can then interpret that as you wish. You could say, well, look, it's a reasonable interpretation in that kind of case. I don't know why this is doing that. It's just going mad, all right? Nothing to do with me. So. Oh, no, it is to do with me. Sorry? It does, yeah, mostly it does. So when it doesn't, again, it becomes a matter of interpretation. You might say, well, look, there's so many rules that talk about perception as a mitigating factor. Surely that must be a mitigating factor here. And, you know, we know, for example, this rule is right near the end of the Pachityas, right? It's nearly number 90 or something like that, about 80-something. So you could say, well, look, they've talked about perception on so many rules beforehand, now they're just abbreviating things and they're not bothering to mention it. Yeah? And that's quite a reasonable interpretation. This is the kind of thing that happens all the time in the suttas. Yeah? So that's one way of looking at it. You could say, well, perception would be implied. But another way would be to say, well, the Vinaya is carefully edited, which, again, is also true to say. And you could say, well, if perception is omitted, then it's clearly omitted for a purpose. That's what the text says. The text doesn't mention perception. So this is what I'm saying, you know, coming back to that point, I'm not insisting on one interpretation or the other. I'm just saying that when we make the interpretations, we should be clear in our mind about how far the text goes and where does our interpretation take over from that.
Yeah.
And what are the grounds for that interpretation. Yeah.
So in some basically, if you offer them a Buddha Rupa and there's a coin there,
mm-hmm.
they'll confess it with this rule.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be what you would do?
What do you mean, a coin and a Buddha Rupa?
Oh, it's just an example that
you
pick up something and there's something on the thing and he didn't know and look at it. So that would be, would you also kind of consider this is a rule that should be, that you would confess in it with
With this one or with the accepting money one, I would probably accept, put under the picking up money rule, taking money rule.
Picking up
money. Cool. Yeah, the Nisagya Pachitya rule for using money.
For using money?
Yeah.
But I thought that has to be your money. Like, you have the perception that this is, I'm receiving it.
Again, that's a perception. That's an interpretation. Yeah. So the rule itself is quite short, the rule about accepting money. Yeah, it's just the same thing. It's just, you should, gold or silver, should you pick it up or have it picked up? Or consent to have it placed near you.
The difference is if you confess that rule,
someone gives you $10,000 of cash and you touch it,
yeah.
then you have to
throw it down the cliff.
Yeah.
So that's why the
Susan and Bigger have always confessed this. And I think that's a reasonable interpretation. Yeah. Yeah. But it's just that it is an interpretation, that's all. So just have to remember, bear that in mind. Yeah.
So when you're talking about the grant, I forgot what your grounds were when I asked you about this in the case of moving a donation box.
Uh-huh.
At that point you had said, oh, then I think it comes under this rule because you are picking it up.
Yeah, I think it would come under Tavakalikam, yeah.
But then that's temporarily, yeah?
Yeah.
So then that day you had said that, oh, it is an effect.
Oh, well, I was probably mistaken then.
Okay.
Human error.
Yeah, it happens from time to time. Yeah, I hadn't noticed that I haven't read this rule for a while, so I didn't notice that particular clause. Yeah, but I think that sounds quite a reasonable interpretation of that. Yeah, so picking it up temporarily, yeah, I think moving a donation box or something like that would be what it means. Right.
If your intention to pick it up in order to pick for other people and not to take it for oneself.
Yeah.
It is a pure mind.
It's what, sorry? It's a pure mind.
Yeah. It comes from good intention.
Right.
Yeah, to protect property for other people.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so it should not be an offense.
Yeah.
But here it doesn't mention about the intention at all.
No, although, I mean, as you said, it's the intention is implied, but it doesn't explicitly state what the intention is. Yeah, it's implied.
Most of other rumis also mention intention as one of the very important factors.
Right.
But
yeah.
It doesn't mention intention and it doesn't mention perception.
Yeah.
So it makes it very ambiguous.
Ambiguous, yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's true.
There's an actual example. When I went to the party class, one of the laser porters gave me a box which had a GPS unit and some money in it. And like people were there. Eric wasn't there and
right.
They warmed off and
right.
You know, what it was box and it's all. The money wasn't for me, it wasn't for us.
Right.
Things actualized down the diet. So it's a specific donation, not for me, not for us, and we'll all just sort of take it on.
Right.
But basically sort of on trust, you know.
Right.
Because he obviously trusted me to bring it to the monastery and that's basically what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in cases.
Not the reading was in the box. This was his gift and his donation.
Right. Yeah, definitely. If you don't perceive it as being yours, then you have to look after it. If it's your money, then throw it out.
Yeah, because if you see this is like money for you, you know,
yeah.
Leave it or something.
Yeah. So I mean,
this rule wouldn't apply. This rule wouldn't apply. That case,
it's
not
what?
The monastery, it's not the house.
It was a monastery. It was a private class, so it had Buddha root and stuff. Good enough for me.
But in this rule,
Arama is a monastic residence, it's not a Buddhist centre.
Okay.
Yeah.
You
may have a good argument there, but I don't think it's an argument regarding this rule.
I don't know.
I don't see how this rule applies at all. It's not like you're picking up a lay person accidentally. Left, it's just
well, no, it was basically taking something on trust, sort of thing. To wasn't for me, I was just deliberate.
But once again, there's a non-offense under this rule if you took it on trust. So this rule is applying in the monastery or in house. So it's a non-offense under this rule if you take it on trust in a monastery or house. If the rule doesn't apply, you're not getting an exception to this rule.
Yeah, I use a novice exception. I wasn't receiving the money for myself, novice.
Sure, yeah.
So I think it's so.
Yeah, I mean, that's a separate issue. I mean, it's obviously not against the 10 precepts, but you're kind of bhikkhu, right, whether it's against specifically this rule. I'm not entirely clear about that.
Is there a rule that has the same detail and it doesn't specify the house or monastery?
No.
So basically, this rule would be the only one in reference to that you could actually.
No, that's not correct. There is a rule against handling money.
Yeah, that's
so you don't get out of the rule. You don't get out of the rule against handling money. Saying, it was handed on trust under this rule only applies in this.
I think that's been too sort of strict in that definition. I think it's sort of like anywhere you invite the teacher or receive a meal or something, rather than anywhere wandering about and just happen to come across it. So we
do you think that would count as a house? I mean, that sounds reasonable.
But creating a whole. Carving out a huge exception to one standing rule by making it by digging into the exception of another rule just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I'm not digging into the exception of another rule. I'm just saying that to me it seems meaning the thing of a monastery or a house. It's meant to include places where you're invited to receive a meal by the Buddhist lay supporters and that. It doesn't seem to be too much of a stretch.
No, I think that's reasonable. Yeah. Yeah.
What did you say is reasonable? What did you hear?
Oh, to take something like a Buddhist centre or something as being similar to a house.
Okay, but I think what he was saying was that if somebody were to hand a bhikkhu a box of money, that would be okay because we're taking it on trust. And I'm saying that's not where this rule is coming from.
Yeah, I would agree with that also, yeah. Yeah, what would I do in that kind of case if I was in that situation? Yeah, I mean, usually there's some lay people.
I think that they would be there because he'd have to be with a hut and the wife.
Right.
He'd want to lose something. So. But even then, tell them, this is money, take it, that's the rule just as much. You could inform them, you know, what it is.
Yeah, that's what I'd do.
There's also, could probably other lay people just take their cars and just think they can get things. You know, of course, things in Toronto, it's wrong.
I mean, if there was any lay people around, what I would do in that situation is to say, oh look, there's been some donations left here. If you're here, I wonder whether it would be possible for you to take it to the car for us. Or something like that.
Wouldn't it be sufficient?
That's not directive. He's saying, is it possible? That's not a direction.
Okay.
Command is pick it up and take it to the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So could you take it to the car as not a command?
It's not a command.
Are you sure it's not a command in terms of
Vinaya? No, absolutely. Yeah, we've discussed this before in Vinaya classes, and the Pali is very clear about what a direction is. Yeah, and the Pali is you say pick this up, take this there. That's
so
a command.
Do you have to use like weird super hints, like?
Generally speaking, just using, you know, actual, I mean, there's a reason why those things are normal English idioms is because, you know, it's just not nice to go around giving orders to people all the time. So you say, you know, would you do this or, you know, is it possible to do that or something? And then, you know, that's inviting them, if they have any reluctance or problem, it's inviting them to have an out. So there's no coercion, that's the point, it's just an invitation. And they can say, oh look, sorry, I don't have time, no problem. But if you say to someone, pick this up and put that there, then...
I had a question about those weird, hinty things. Was the purpose of that so that the onus of intention is placed on the other guy?
Uh-huh.
That they have to connect the dots and have to make their own intention that, I will go take this to the car.
Yeah.
As opposed to you, even if you phrase it nicely, you're still putting that idea in your head.
Yeah. You see, if you look at that in the context of these rules about money and so on, you know, they still apply very, very much the case. If you look, for example, on a check, you know, the check has below the bit where it says the signature, it says pay the bearer the sum of. That is a command. So as soon as you sign the check, you are giving a command, pay the bearer of some of. You don't write on a check, well, look, if you'd consider please reimbursing this person, then that would be really appreciated. So that's what you can't do, is giving around those orders. Yeah, Alex.
I can understand how maybe a layperson might interpret that as command, because from my personal context, working in hospitality, you say, could you do something? So your boss says that to you. It usually means doing that now. It's just a way to phrase it, but the meaning is still, you do that now.
Sure. People can take that, but that's up to them. And you know, you always want to try to be as open with those things as possible. And you know, the critical thing is what happens when somebody says no. Right, that's where it really tells. Right, if somebody says no, what do you say? You know, you say no. Well, could you do that? Yeah. Or if they say no, you say okay. And then you know in your heart that you're not commanding them.
Yeah. Would you do this? No.
Yeah, look, people do it all the time.
Once there's a lay person, a monk who's going around watching, he says, oh, that's a weed.
Uh-huh.
I made a little note of it.
Yeah.
Says, that means what you pulled out.
Uh-huh.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
I think that the lay bits were too...
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's a very good example. You know, where in fact he was giving a command, even though it wasn't using the English words for giving a command. In his mind, he was giving a command, and you should do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's exactly what you shouldn't do.
So. Spray paint on a weed,
And
they just pointed the evil without making a command.
Saying evil is not a command.
Yeah. Okay.
Saying.
Voice would be very important too.
So does that come with intention? Because what if somebody was in danger?
Yeah, there's no venerable saying you can't give commands in general. There's just like a few cases where you can't give commands in terms of picking up money and stuff. The one we're talking about now is you can't, you see, for example, you know, you can't, you know, give the command for somebody to take money on your behalf.
So then the other thing that is available is just try to get someone to do it. Then you might think, well, I really can't leave this thing here. It's not responsible. So if you can't, then you're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
This sort of a description is sometimes you. If you know you're going to do it anyway, you can't stand also do it.
Yeah. Right, and just to come back to the question somebody asked before, like what would you do in that circumstance? Generally speaking, if it was a situation like that, like say that's a situation that Venerable Nandiya mentioned earlier or something like that, you just make a call. And if you're not sure on it, you confess a doubt at the next depositor. You know, you just say, well, look, this happened, and I wasn't really sure whether it was an offence or not. You know, sometimes you just do what you think is the right thing. Sometimes you can get back and look it up in the vineyard and it might clarify or ask somebody. But if you really don't know, then you just confess that the depositor say, well, this is what happened, I'm not sure whether it's an offence or not. That's all.
So if you just confess
that
you still declare that you're pure?
Yeah, yeah, because you've confessed the doubt. Yeah.
And then if you later realise that for sure, then you confess that you did it, right?
That's right, yeah, exactly. So if that's right. So you say, well, if I had a doubt about such and such an offence, later on, if you maybe clarify your doubt, maybe you realise actually it wasn't an offence at all. So that doesn't really matter. But if you then realise actually it was an offence, then you should confess the offence. You haven't confessed the offence, you've confessed the doubt, doing something with having a doubt about it. So you haven't actually confessed the offence itself. So if you later on realise, no, actually that was an offence, then you should confess that.
Then do you have to confess it more than one time before you clear up the doubt? It's like 3 months later you clear up the doubt that it was an offence? Are you supposed to continually confess every time?
What do you mean, continue to confess which what? Oh, the doubt. No, you just confess the doubt once, yeah.
And 3 months later.
You confess the doubt once, but you might discuss it on more occasions, yeah. I mean, especially if it's something which is serious, then you know, sometimes if it's something, you know, if it's a minor thing like this, and the examples we've been talking about today are all fairly trivial examples. Now, if it's something that's significant, then you know, sometimes these things play on your mind, and you know, so you might want to discuss that, and then you go away and you sit on it for a while, and then you come back and discuss it some more, and sort of try to remember or clarify what your intention was. Sometimes it can take some time for that to settle down and figure out whether it actually was an offence or not.